Yo, what's going on, everybody? This is Rob from, I'm one half of Counterculture. Happy Sunday morning. Figured I'd start you off with some KRS-One, try and be a professional podcast there with a little music. It was my shot at it, just put my iPhone in front of this Yeti microphone that we purchased for $140, like dumbasses. So basically, me and my friend Justin, who run the Instagram, we didn't know what to do the other day, and, you know, we do what normal people do. We went down to Best Buy and spent $140 on a mic. But it was worth it. It was a good investment because this thing is a beauty, and we're going to be using it because we got a lot of stuff coming up. And basically, we didn't know where to start off with the YouTube, so we figured that a simple question and answer session would be the way to go, you know, just answer some stupid questions, some good questions, get in depth, so you get a feel, and see what we're like. I mean, you can only get so much from the Instagram. The Instagram is basically long posts, stupid memes, just, it's basically, okay, so here's what we'll do. We'll start off with one of the first questions I got on the question and answer was, I'm going to read it direct. It is from Benjamin Noxus. I don't know if that's pronounced Noxus or maybe it's silent, Noxus. I have no idea. Basically what he said, well, his first question was something unrelated, but I'm going to go with this question. He said, how are you doing? How's life? Okay. And on the other one I posted with a question, somebody asked me, how old are you? Where do you live? Not where do you live, where you live. And do you have any pets? That's from Aro Hirvinsalo, if I'm pronouncing that right. I'm going to butcher so many names. Okay, so basically, what I wrote down on my little paper here for prep is me. So they're asking about me. And they're also asking about Justin, so I'm going to give you a little rundown of him. I'm sure it's okay with him. I didn't ask him in advance. Basically, Counterculture is run by two 17-year-old kids from New York. We're high schoolers. We just happen to give a shit about what's going on in the world, have a deeply rooted interest in politics and current events and whatnot. That's just, you know, a summary. It runs much deeper than that, as you see with the Instagram. And we want to be someday get involved. We want to be investigative journalists and do great work like you see out of the Glenn Greenwalds of the world and the Amy Goodmans of the world with The Intercept and Democracy Now, or just in public intellectuals like I would love to be him one day. I don't see it coming, but I'm going to say his name. Noam Chomsky rings a bell. I have a very big man crush on Noam Chomsky. But basically, me and Justin are just two kids who happen to be pretty well informed, and we care about the world and have a big interest in helping the world and shaping the world. But the direct question was, how am I? Where do I live? Do I have any pets? Okay, so I'm good. I'm doing well. I'll get into that a little deeper in a little bit. I do have pets. I have a dog and a cat. My brother has some snakes. My brother and my dad. I really don't associate with the snakes. Not a reptile guy, but I like my dog. My cat's nice too. Where do I live? New York, Long Island. We'll give you that. I don't want to get too specific. Don't want to get mugged, but I'll give you Long Island. And how am I? I'm good. I'm just chilling. It's Sunday morning. My parents and my brother are in Delaware, and I've got the house alone, so this is pretty lit. Took the mic out, figured I'd record a little bit. I'm doing well. I'm excited. I wanted to get this started for a very long time, and I know it's just a fucking YouTube channel and Instagram channel with, well, the 25,000 followers is a little nice. It sounds nice, but basically it's just a fucking YouTube channel and Instagram channel. We're nothing spectacular, but it's small steps, and I want to grow this, and I know I got Justin with me. The two of us want to do big things, so this is just the beginning in regards to me and Justin and Counterculture. Well, we switched. It went from We Are Legion. Okay, so I'm going to get a little more in depth with ourselves in the account. I actually started the account in August of 2014 when everything went down in Ferguson, Missouri with Michael Brown and the police. And I was completely ill-informed, and I had no idea what I was talking about on basically all the issues. And I was just a kid who thought that the cops were at fault. And I saw fault just from looking at the situation. And I automatically took the side of the people and Michael Brown and whatnot. So I started the account, and I started posting pro, you know, Ferguson memes and whatnot. And then I got drawn in by the whole anonymous crowd. And I became friends with a lot of those interesting anonymous people that you can find anywhere on the web. And almost got myself drawn into hacking and things of that nature. I never really got into the hacking because I'm tech savvy, but not hack savvy. I really haven't. I don't know how to hack. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. But when it comes to the Instagram, I'm pretty good with that. Justin's my editor. I can just talk. I can run my mouth, as if you haven't found that out in 5 minutes and 44 seconds. But Justin's my editor. I'm tech savvy, but he's much more tech savvy. He's the editor. He's that wing of this operation. So basically I started the account and I used to just post memes and then I got drawn into the whole anonymous crowd and I got sucked into that. And I still respect anonymous. Now I'm not knocking them, but after a year or so under the anonymous tag, it started to become unaffiliated. We became unaffiliated with anonymous. We were no longer, you know, dropping the "we are anonymous, we are legion" concept of, you know, we have to be a collectivist group, and we were kind of an outside voice. And I discussed it with Justin, and we decided we wanted to move away from the whole anonymous tag. And that's when we launched Counterculture. And basically that was Justin's wording. I gotta give him props. I'm sure he'll hear this soon. He came up with Counterculture, the name. We literally were fucking thinking for a name for probably weeks. We were trying to think of a new name. We were stuck with We Are Legion, and we were like, what do we transfer to? And then we had like Gorilla. We were trying to do something like revolutionary, like Gorilla Radio. And we were like, but we run an Instagram account. We don't have anything, you know, audio-wise yet. And then one day he was just like, boom, the 60s, Counterculture. That literally sums us up as people. We're fucking hippies for 2016. We actually give a shit about what's going on in the world. So I was like, dude, that's great. And we kind of just ran with it. And the followers, I was hoping we wouldn't lose people because they didn't realize that it was the same account. But none of that happened. We actually grew in followers. And we went from about 18,000 to 25,000 under the new label. And that's where we're at. So that's the basic backstory of the account. And us as people, like I said, we're just high schoolers. We're just trying to make a difference in the world. And we're aspiring journalists. We want to get involved with this whole new media, per se. The dinosaur media is crumbling. Not to sound like Alex Jones, but the dinosaur media is crumbling. Okay? Nobody's reading newspapers. Nobody's watching Fox News. The average age of a Fox News viewer, I'm pretty sure I saw this in a Kalinske video, Kyle Kalinske, is like 68. Their viewership is literally dying. Nobody cares about what Bill O'Reilly thinks on these issues. People are fed up with as much as people are fed up with the political establishment, people are fed up with the media establishment. And that's why we need people like Kyle Kalinske, Luke Radowski, the Young Turks, even Alex Jones. Alex Jones started my interest in these things. I may not agree with him on everything now, but I got drawn into critically thinking and looking at the issues from a different lens because I watched a 9/11 truth video, and that drew me in. And I was a little more fringe when I began things, and I slowly transitioned from conspiracy to fact and logic and reasoning and things of that nature. I still don't believe, I don't buy the official story for 9/11. I have questions, but I definitely don't think it was our own government 100% perpetrating an attack. There's definitely questions to be asked, as we'll get into with the 28 pages in a little bit. But that's where I started with, and it kind of just grew away from InfoWars. And I went from the middle right of the spectrum to probably more left than is accepted here in modern day America. I'm definitely not far left, but in modern day America, politically, in the establishment, I would definitely be considered a terrorist, a left-wing terrorist, because, you know, God forbid I want to make change in the system. But I'm with the average person. But yeah, back to what I was saying, I basically transitioned from, that's where it all started. I started with the 9/11 truth video, and it kind of just kicked off from there. I still have my notebooks from 2014 where I was writing shit down about fucking 9/11 truth, and now it transferred into studies and facts and things like the things that are more interesting and more compelling in today's society. So, all right, well, that's enough of me and Justin. So let's jump into the 28 pages, the exact question I received from one of our Instagram followers was, the exact question was, give me a second, I'm slow. What's the 28 pages about? I don't have time to read it all. That's from Masonator.77. And I'm pretty sure there was another one. I just don't want to not read your names because then I'll feel like a dick. Te Wicked Guy with underscores, or not guy, gay, said, they released the 9/11 pages which mentioned Saudi Arabia. Do you think this was done purposely to hurt Saudi Arabia in some way? All right, so I'm going to jump right into it right from there. No. This was not released to hurt Saudi Arabia in any way, shape, or form. Why? Saudi Arabia is one of our most critical allies in the region, and we've been buddy-buddy with Saudi Arabia since about the end of World War II in that period. And it's a shame because, as I could get into it another time, I know I'm going to end up talking about it now. Saudi Arabia is the number one exporter of Salafi Wahhabi terrorism in the world. They export the ideology of ISIS. So basically, no, this was not released to hurt Saudi Arabia. America doesn't want to fucking hurt Saudi Arabia. America ships Saudi Arabia over millions, maybe even billions of dollars of weaponry per year. We're giving weapons to people who behead gays and people who commit, according to Saudi Arabia, commit witchcraft, whatever that fucking means. They behead them in the public square for things like drug running and apostasy and things of that nature. It's ridiculous. They literally are ruled by Sharia law, and they're an Islamic theocracy. And we pick and choose. You know, we hate Iran because, you know, they're Shia and they're geopolitically aligned against us with Russia and Assad. And then, on the other hand, there's another Islamic theocracy. The holy city, Mecca, is in Saudi Arabia. And because they're Sunni and extremist Sunni and Wahhabi and Salafi, and their geopolitical alignment is with us, and they help us in the region, and they give us oil, and they believe the same things as we do, and they just pretty much listen to everything we have to say, we're okay with that. We just kind of turn a blind eye to the human rights abuses and things of that nature. I was talking about this with my girlfriend in the car the other day. Not that she gives a shit. She listens to me. She's very nice. She loves me. Shout out to Jackie. But I kind of was ranting about this the fact that America claims to be the moral, you know, we hold the moral keys of the world, but it's just simply not true, because we turn a blind eye to human rights abuses and we turn a blind eye to war crimes if it's our ally. It's all about geopolitical alignment. It's all about the money. It's all about it's all about power. It's all about power and resources, and we're willing to just turn a blind eye to Saudi Arabia, who beheads more people than ISIS. We're willing to turn a blind eye to the same radical ideology that ISIS holds within a state government that has actual power in the region. If ISIS had that much power, we'd have John McCain and Ted Cruz and Obama on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans, saying we have to squash ISIS. But because it's Saudi Arabia and they give us their oil and they're our geopolitical ally, it doesn't matter. We just kind of let it go over our head. Okay, so enough of Saudi Arabia. I could rant about that all day. Let's go back to the 28 pages. Okay, so basically, if anybody listening to this, a whole probably 10 listeners that we're going to get, doesn't know the history of the whole 28-page scandal. What happened was, after the 9/11 attacks, which were horrendous, to say the least, it took George W. Bush a year to cave into pressure to form a commission to investigate the attacks. So he finally caved to the pressure, and he set up a commission. A little fun fact that a lot of people don't know, he actually tried to put fucking Henry Kissinger as the head of the commission. The war criminal Henry Kissinger, who participated in the illegal bombing of Cambodia with Richard Nixon in the 60s, and maybe it was the 70s, which killed more people than the A-bomb bombs in Japan, and I think about the bombing of Germany combined. That's who Bush tried to put on top of his commission. So that just goes to show you what kind of person George W. Bush is. But anyway, it took him a year. So he finally caved into the pressure. Fuck, I gotta do a fucking commission. And he sets up the commission. And Kissinger was not put as the head of the commission because the people were outraged by this, because the people know what Henry Kissinger's done in his career. And the commission was released a year later. I have the actual date. Hold on one second. I got this. It's in my WordPress, typing up another blog post. The actual date was, I'm kind of just shooting from the hip. I'll have more organized YouTube videos soon, but I figured this would be a good way to just get it cooking. The commission was established on November 27th of 2002, which was 440 days after 9/11. So it took him a year, almost about a year and a half, to launch a commission into investigating the biggest attack on American soil in U.S. history. Pretty sickening. And the final report was issued on July 22nd, 2004. So because of the incompetency of the Bush administration, it took the American people 4 years to get any kind of investigation into the attacks on 9/11. Just think about the families of the attack looking for an answer, and it took us 3 years because Bush decided to push off a commission for 442 days, actually. Pretty horrible. Okay, so basically, the commission came out on July 22nd of 04, and Bush decided to redact 28 pages, and those 28 pages were allegedly at that time involving Saudi Arabia, who happens to be Bush's butt buddy when he was in office, and for years, it stayed quiet, and then slowly, certain Congress members like Bob Graham went into the, you know, whenever they have a classified document like the TPP, you have to go into these secret rooms in the bottom of the Capitol and read them with no advisors, and you can't take notes, and you're in like a little fucking cubicle, and Bob Graham went down there with some other senators, I don't remember, I can't recall their names off the top of my head, and they read this, and, Justin, I'm gonna botch his last name, Justin Amash, he's like the libertarian Rand Paul-ish senator from Kentucky, I believe, also, or representative in the House. And Amash came out, I'm pretty sure, don't quote me on this, and said that it changed his fundamental understanding of history. So it was that impactful. So for years and years and years, people have been calling for the release of these pages. On the trail in 2008, President Obama, making all his promises that he didn't fucking live up to in office, said, I'll release the... I'm going to do my impression, hold on. I will release the 28 pages. Oh, that was pretty shitty. I can usually do it better. Okay, this is fun. He promised to release them, and he fucking did, but it took him 8 years. Just like Guantanamo, not closed. I'm going to get us out of Iraq, going to get us out of Afghanistan. Still fucking there. Create more... I'm going to stop the wars. He's got seven ongoing military operations, with illegal drone strikes in non-combat zones. That's Obama, but we'll get to that another day. And, finally, they're released. So for years, we've been talking about the speculation. There's been ties between Saudi nationals and the 9/11 hijackers. And we know that I'm pretty sure it was 15 out of the 19 hijackers were Saudi Arabian. So we attacked the wrong country. Fucking 15 Saudi Arabians, we go to war with Iraq and Afghanistan. So basically, I read through all the 28 pages. I got the gist of it. I got the important documents. And I'm gonna try and pull up. I'm gonna pull up something right now, and I'm gonna read directly from the documents. But it is the smoking gun. It shows Saudi ties, and it's pretty huge because we've been waiting for this for a long time. I almost shit myself when I saw the notification on my phone from Russia today that they came out. Okay, so here's something on Twitter. I'm reading a direct quote from the 28 pages. It says, "Finding. While in the United States, some of the September 11th hijackers were in contact with and received support or assistance from individuals who may be connected to the Saudi government." Boom. Quote, "There is information, primarily from FBI sources, that at least two of those individuals were alleged by some to be Saudi intelligence officers. The Joint Inquiry's review confirmed that the intelligence community also has information, much of which has yet to be independently verified, indicating that individualists associated with the Saudi government in the United States may have other ties to Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups." What a fucking surprise. "The FBI and CIA have informed the Joint Inquiry that since the September 11th attacks, they are treating the Saudi issue seriously, but both still have only a limited understanding of the Saudi government's ties to terrorist elements." Okay, so that's just a bunch of bullshit at the end. In the beginning, you get the facts. It says, "While in the United States, some of the 9/11 hijackers were in contact with and received support or assistance from individuals connected to the Saudi government." So there it is. Boom. That's the bombshell. So now we know for a fact. It may not have been the actual royal family. Why would the royal family get involved in this attack? They're friends with Bush. They don't want to get their hands to be dirty. They had to do, maybe they used like shell groups like. Wow, I always tie other issues into the issue I'm talking about. So maybe they use a little shell officer to get the hijackers in on this. So we definitely have to read through the full 28 pages, but that's my quick take on it. It definitely shows Saudi ties to the attack, and it shouldn't be a surprise. If you look at Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Saudi Arabia, Jaish al-Islam, Al-Nusra Front, which is Al-Qaeda in Syria, all these different groups, they share the same ideology, basically. They're all extreme, they're all, well, not necessarily. I shouldn't say that because it's a little more nuanced than that. Al-Qaeda and ISIS hate each other. But what I'm trying to say is the broad group of these, the broad understanding of these extreme groups is that they have a literalist interpretation of the Quran and the Hadith, and they will kill over it. They are extremists. And basically, Saudi Arabia is in that philosophy. It's the same exact Wahhabi philosophy that they export in their mosques around the world. They believe that the Quran is the perfect word of the creator of the universe, and they believe that they have to follow it to a T, and that's why you see them doing these ridiculous things like beheading, like stoning women, adulterers, and stoning women who are raped. The woman gets raped, and then they fucking stone the woman. It's outrageous. It defies logic. But this is what it says. We'll get to this. But this is what they believe, because they believe in a literalist interpretation of the Quran. That's the problem. They are fundamentalists. They're not... I hate the backlash that Obama and Hillary get for not using the words radical Islam, because they're both wrong. Because the Republicans are wrong, because it's not radical Islam. It's fucking Islam. They're interpreting the Quran literally. They're interpreting the Quran perfectly. The good people here that we have that are Islamic in the United States and in the West are not interpreting the Quran literally. They are living out Western values, not just Western values, but just good moral values. They're not actually obeying the Quran and the Hadith. If you crack that book, you will find horrible things. Just like the Bible, you'll find horrible things. And the people in the Middle East that are committing these atrocities, they're not. There definitely is a factor of U.S. foreign policy and Western imperialism that is influencing these people to commit the attacks. That we know for sure. But the main driving force behind the reason that they're willing to pull the trigger and the reason they're willing to press the button to detonate the explosion to kill themselves is because they believe that they'll get the fucking what's the amount of the virgins in heaven and the paradise, and they're a martyr, and they actually believe this stuff. And it's not Islamophobia to recognize that this is an issue. If you can't tell by the way I'm talking, I'm a big Sam Harris person. Sam Harris is not a bigot. He cares about the effect of belief and the consequence of belief on action. So if I believe that I'll give you an example with a different faith. If I believe that a wafer can be turned into the body of Elvis Presley, as Sam Harris famously said, then I'd be a fucking crazy person. But when Christians do it and they say, "Oh, it's Jesus Christ, and he's in, and the host has become a man," it's accepted. So the problem is belief. The problem is belief, because belief turns into action. But in regards to Christians here in the United States, they usually don't jump on action, except when you have these fucking crazy Christians that go and bomb abortion clinics and whatnot. That's horrible. It's the same problem. All right, Smitty, you're gonna have to edit that out. I heard my grandpa, so I had to go check what was going on. All right, so 3, 2, 1. I'm gonna get right back into this, and boom. All right, so I got a little off topic there. Started talking about religion. We'll get back to religion later. So let's jump into the coup in Turkey. Okay, so first off, we need to talk about Turkey in general. So what was going on in Turkey that could have possibly inspired the military to take action? Well, one, you have a dictator who is restricting rights and taking away the rights of the people, and he's fucking batshit crazy. So basically, Erdogan, let's talk about Erdogan. Okay, Erdogan is a friend of the West. How? I will never know. Erdogan is a fascist, far-right dictator. Well, yes, far-right dictator. Is the far-right Islamist dictator who is restricting on free speech and cracking down on free speech, I should say, and is pretty much a tyrant at this point. He's a whiny PC tyrant. And what I mean by that is you can't criticize him. People in Turkey who have criticized him have been arrested, detained. I'm pretty sure there was a story of a man who created a meme that compared him to one of the, I don't even know, a fucking like elf Lord of the Rings. I've never watched Lord of the Rings, so I don't know, but he apparently looks like Erdogan. I saw the picture, he definitely looks like him. And that's free speech in America, in the West, in any nation that wants to be invited into the European Union. You would expect that kind of speech is an inalienable right. That's free speech. Nope. Erdogan had him, I'm pretty sure, arrested and detained and questioned. It's, you wouldn't believe stuff. There's another story. This kid ripped down an Erdogan poster. He had him arrested. There were two journalists. I actually did a story about this on the Instagram. I remember typing it up. that, according to Erdogan, were had terrorist activity, and they revealed state secrets. All they did was write a report on how the Turkish government is arming the Syrian rebels. That just goes to show you that the Syrian rebels are not the you know, moderate freedom fighters that we're told they are, because he knows that they're fucking terrorists, and then he cracked down on the people that released the story. But anywho, the two journalists were I think they received the sentence of about, I think it was 12 years. Don't quote me on this. I may be factually incorrect. You know, I actually give a shit about that, like, unlike the mainstream media. But I'm pretty sure it was 10 years. It may have been less, may have been like 2 or 4, but they definitely were given a long prison term for revealing state secrets and some kind of terrorist activity for doing their fucking job and reporting on who the government is arming. So that's Erdogan. And basically another fact about him is, asked in a press conference what kind of government he would like to model his new Turkish regime after, he pointed to Adolf Hitler and Nazi Germany. I shit you not. Of all the examples you could have gave, you could have said, you know, I don't even know, because all, you know, the modern democracies in the world are not really the greatest at this point, but you at least say the United States. I mean, we're not a functioning democracy, but at least we have freedom of speech here, or the UK, or somewhere, or maybe the states over in Denmark and Sweden over there, all the leftists, you know, the states over there that are booming. At least say something like that. He points to Nazi Germany. The question was literally, who would you like to model your government after? And he said, well, you know, the model I will fulfill is like Nazi Germany under Hitler. And everybody just kind of looked at him like he was a psychopath. So he reminds me of not just Hitler, but Donald Trump, because Erdogan cannot take an insult. And we know that Trump is the same way. He claims to be the straight shooter and the fighter of political correctness, and he's such a macho tough man. And then he fucking sued Bill Maher for a joke about him. So that just proves that you're a whiny PC bitch, in the words of Galinsky, one of my favorite analysts, if you haven't noticed by now. So basically that's Erdogan. That's the state of the country. There's a crackdown on free speech. There's a crackdown against the LGBT community. Erdogan sent in the police to break up a gay rally, I think it was a month ago. So the country is in shock. The country is in bad conditions. So I'm not that involved. I don't know much about the history of Turkey, but I was reading a thread on Twitter. I know it's not the most credible of sources, but I'm pretty sure it was a journalist or a citizen journalist who was giving a history of the Turkish military. And apparently, in history, there's been lots of coups in Turkey, military coup d'etats. And unlike the United States military, which is, you know, headed by a commander-in-chief, apparently Erdogan is not the commander-in-chief of the Turkish military. The Turkish military operates on its own, and it's like it's part of the checks and balances. I don't know if they have that in Turkey, but part of the checks and balances-like system that exists here, where the military can take action to balance out one part of the regime if they become too powerful. So basically, the military saw that Erdogan was cracking down on free speech, and that Erdogan is a crazy motherfucker, and they launched this coup, and it was not successful, as we'll see. But basically, from my perspective, what happened was the military acted on behalf of the people, which they said in a statement that they were trying to, I forget the exact quote. Actually, I have it. Let me just find it on my Instagram post from the attack. And, hold on 1 second. Smitty, you're going to have to edit this out. All right, Smitty, I'm back. That was Joe. He called me from the road in Delaware. All right, so let's jump back into this. My back is killing me. I hate this fucking seat. All right, ready? Let's jump back into the coup. Boom. Yo, I don't know what just happened, Smitty. You're gonna have to edit that out. All right, so 3, 2, 1. All right, let's get back to the coup. So basically, I'm not in favor of armed coups that kill over, I'm pretty sure there was 1,440 wounded, according to this Reuters article that I'm looking at right now. 161 killed. And 2,839 army members detained, including ordinary soldiers and high-ranking officers. So, yeah, this was pretty bad. This is a very rare kind of situation, in my opinion. It looked like they just caught them napping. Erdogan was apparently on vacation. And I know that sounds a little fishy to some people, and they're saying, what if it was just a false flag, and these people are looking, and Erdogan staged this to gain more power, and it does look like that's a possibility, but we don't have any evidence. So if you're going to make that argument, you need to have some kind of evidence that shows the fingerprints of Erdogan on this. So wait a little bit, show me the facts, and then I would love to come out and say that's what happened, because that would be great, because then that would prove that Erdogan is a psychopath. But what matters is we have to look at the actual facts and not work backwards from our conclusion. We have to look at what we have from the ground up, and what we have from the ground up is that this was an actual coup attempt from the Turkish military that was fed up with the government because of Erdogan's crackdown on free speech, and it failed. So basically, they closed off the two main bridges in Istanbul. They surrounded the airport with tanks. It wasn't done in a non-violent way. It was done in the wrong way. I don't condone this coup in any way, shape, or form. It's definitely not democratic. It's definitely not, non-violent, of course. And it was pretty bad. But it was a shit show. So basically, Erdogan was on vacation, and then he popped up somewhere else. They brought him to a safe space, and he gave a speech, and they said, we got this under control. And basically, they did get it under control. And now he has it under control, and he's using this as a turning point to say, oh, we need more, we have to clean up. Erdogan said, here's a quote, he said, it's not a quote, he said, the attempted coup was an act of treason, and it's a reason to, quote, clean up the armed forces. So I see where people are coming from, where they're saying that this could have been a false flag, and it's not an actual coup, and Erdogan is just using this to stage more power, and attain this Hitler Nazi Germany government that he wants. But there's no evidence of that. So there is evidence that he is looking to do that, but there's no evidence that the coup, his fingerprints are anywhere on the coup. And there's also no evidence of any CIA fingers on the coup. People who are pointing, people who like to start, like Alex Jonesy, people who like to say, oh, conspiracy, boom, immediately false flag. You can't do that. You need evidence. I'm the first person to give you a history of all the coups that the United States has been involved in around the world, whether it be in Nicaragua or Iran in 1953 with Mohammad Mossadegh, where we overthrew the democratically elected leader, or in there's so many off the top of my head. I can't shoot. It's 10 in the morning. There's so many coups that we've been involved in overthrowing governments. And this is not one, because why would we be involved in overthrowing one of our crucial allies that is helping us commit our horrible foreign policy in the region? Erdogan is Obama's buddy. He's on full board with the whole, you know, let's pretend we're fighting ISIS while arming the same groups that join ISIS, and let's coincidentally, let's continue this neoliberal, neocon, interventionist foreign policy. He's completely on board with the West. The only thing that they don't like about him, not the United States, but Europe, who has a moral compass, won't let him into the EU because they see that he's cracking down on free speech. They see that he's allowing people to speak out against him. They see that he's a dictator. Here in America, it's not gaining that much attention. Nobody really gives a shit. But in Europe, at least they have a moral compass, and they're not letting this guy in the EU. So, yep, I'm just shooting from the hip. I don't have a lot on the coup. That's just my roundabout thoughts. We're going to keep this quick. I don't want to get too long. We're already a half hour in. All right, so let's jump to the next topic, which I got some funny questions, because this is always fun to do in a Q&A. So this guy, I'm going to get his name right now, Sid. It's a great question. Let me find it real quick. It was Khalid.vdb said, is the Illuminati real? And what is the New World Order? Okay. So I don't really know where to start with this one. The Illuminati is historically real. It was a group formed by Adam Weishaupt in Bavaria, if I remember correctly, in 1776, the same year that the United States was set up. And basically, it was a secret society on the plane of Freemasonry and the Knights of Malta. And it was just a secret society. And, all right, Smitty, that was my mom again, so you're going to have to edit that out for me. I have all the times typed up in my notes, so I'll let you know where the ones where you have to cut are. So let me edit this one, 35. It's about 30. It's at about 34:50 in that area. Okay, so 3, 2, 1. All right, let's get back into the Illuminati. Okay, so my thoughts on this whole new Illuminati thing. I basically just gave the history of, you know, what the actual Illuminati was. And they, at that time, there was a need for secret societies. I'm pretty sure the reason that a lot of these secret societies were forming was because of crackdown by the Roman Catholic Church and scientists like Galileo that were speaking out and saying, well, you know, the earth isn't really flat. There's not four corners like it says in the Bible. They were being oppressed by the church. And they had to orchestrate these, you know, secret meetings and whatnot. And that may have been the case in Bavaria. But Weishaupt, I'm pretty sure, was like an aristocrat. And they had the secret society. And it was real. The Illuminati was fucking real. Okay, I'll give it to you. But in today's society, there's not some kind of Illuminati overlords pulling the strings over our elected officials. There are people pulling the strings over our elected officials, but they're not the Illuminati. It's the Koch brothers and George Soros and, you know, lobbyists and the true deep state policymakers. But it's a craze. It's a societal craze, this whole Illuminati concept. I'll give you that there are some weird things in Hollywood and in the music industry that you do see repeated symbols, and I don't know what they mean. I mean, you can look up the history of the symbols, but it could just be because the music industry is capitalizing off this because they know that we're looking for it. You ever think of that? But it's not really an issue that should matter. But the Illuminati was real, and it definitely was interesting in about 300 years ago. But that's about it. And in regards to the so-called New World Order, I used to believe in the whole concept of the New World Order and all governments taking over to form this united global regime. But basically what it is the whole, it's the part of the political established, the political spectrum that you hear this New World Order rhetoric from is, fear of this New World Order is from the far right, it's from the fringe right. And what they consider this New World Order is that this is historical, so we'll go back in history to explain this. You see this concept coming from the beginning of our republic, where the non-federalists were opposed to the federalists, who the non-federalists, the anti-federalists, were opposed to state centralized government. They didn't want a big government because they were just freed from King George III, and they saw a centralized government here in America as a threat, and they didn't want the same thing to happen, taxation without representation, and that's understandable. I'm all for that. And as time has gone on, we see this from the right constantly. We see this with slavery, where the states tried to say, oh, it's all right to enslave the Negroes, and you can't take it from us because states' rights. And now we see abortion. Oh, it's the states' rights. It's basically it's their cop a plea where they say, you can't do this. Federal power cannot crack down on us. Because, and usually what the people that are taking that side of the argument are doing is immoral. Slavery. Well, not in the case of the anti-federalists, because they just wanted the Bill of Rights, which is one of the greatest accomplishments of mankind. So you can't be bigoted. You have to look at each case. That just applies with all issues. That's just a belief of mine that I've gained from listening to respected investigative journalists and new media analysts. And you have to look at each case individually instead of just having a bigoted outlook on one particular group of people. So in regards to the New World Order, you see this from the far right. And the far right in today's world have this New World Order rhetoric when they talk about the UN. They don't like this concept of the United Nations people together because they automatically think, New World Order, FEMA camps, they're going to attack us all. And they don't like the concept of the UN, and that's what it is. So they channel it wrong. There is a chance of a New World Order. The New World Order is already upon us. After World War II, you can consider that a New World Order because you saw the new superpowers of the world arise, the United States and the Soviet Union. And now we have just basically the United States with its counterparts of the UK and Saudi Arabia and Israel and, you know, and all the other states. And there is a problem with globalism. Globalism is opposed by both progressives and the libertarianish right, because we see that globalist trade policies. Globalist, I sound like Jones right there. I hate ripping on Jones because he's a smart man when he talks about foreign policy. But other than that, I don't trust him for nothing. So globalism is a problem when in regards to trade deals. Like the TPP is a disaster, just like NAFTA was a disaster. TPP will be a disaster if it gets rammed through and ratified by the 12 member states. So globalist trade policy is a problem. globalist foreign policy is a problem, because we see that we have the warlike states of the world coming together, NATO and you know, the United States, the UK and the West, and then in, you know, our Gulf states like Bahrain and Qatar and Saudi Arabia coming together, and we see this globalist ideology of interventionism, and we need to counter that. But to say that the United Nations is a bad thing, having people sit down at a table and discuss issues, that's just an idea of the fringe right. And I'm sure you could find people on the left too. I don't want to make this a partisan issue, but that's the whole concept of this new world order. If there was really a new world order, like evil Satanist lizard people coming after us to impose their Satanist ideology, and they're going to put us in FEMA camps, it would have happened already. It would have happened already. The whole the Bilderberg group that Jones talks about a lot in InfoWars and the fringe right, that is 100% correct. But it's not some kind of global conspiracy where these people are after us to murder us and put us in FEMA camps. They're just economic elite mixing with the establishment of all the, you know, industrialized, per se, countries of the world, and they're doing stereotypical corruption 101 in politics and history. They're just meeting together, and they're planning policy. That's all it is. They're not sitting down saying, oh, all right, we'll have the lizards come in from this window, and then we'll put the gay frogs will come out of the water, and they'll poison the population. This is the fucking conspiracy world. That's not what's going on. You have to look at things rationally. So that's basically my take on the New World Order. There is a New World Order, per se, but it's not the New World Order that you get from Jones and the fringe right. Okay, well, how many times have I shit on Alex Jones in this? All right, let's get moving, because I want to stay under an hour. Let's go to ISIS and the Middle East. Oh, I'm going to run with this one. This could be bad. The exact question that we got was, I remember it. Here it is. Universe_knowledge said, do you say that America and Israel is behind everything happening in Syria and Middle East, and to make them weak and Israel strong, and from where all the weapons to ISIS? Okay, so the English isn't the greatest, but that's okay. Basically, what the person here is trying to say is, do you think that America and Israel are behind all the chaos in the Middle East, in Syria particularly? And do you think that it's designed to make the Middle East strong, weak and Israel strong? And where are all the weapons coming that are landing in the hands of ISIS? Okay, so I don't know where to start from this. Okay, let's go with the first question. Are Israel and America behind everything in the Middle East? Okay. The fundamental issue, before you can criticize foreign policy and before you can criticize the West, you have to recognize that there is a problem with extremism, and forget extremism, I hate that word, as I said earlier, fundamentalism in the Middle East. And that is a problem. So we have crazy groups in the Middle East. We have fundamentalist Islamic groups that literally believe that the Quran was written by an almighty God and handed down to Muhammad, who happened to be a warlord and pervert and rapist and warlord, conqueror. And that was the word of the universe. And okay, Smitty, that was them again. You see how many fucking times they call me? All right, let's get back into this. So 3, 2, 1. So basically, we have to recognize that there is a problem with fundamentalism. There's a problem ideologically with these people. This is not the way that civilization should be headed. But on top of that, the bigger issue is foreign policy and interventionism, because that is a very big driving force of the instability of the region and the reason why these people are driven to fully believe in the ideas that they do. So you can't just, you have to have both. You have to have the concept that these people are psychotic fundamentalists who believe in a book that was handed down by a warlord, rapist, murderer. And you have to understand that we have people here in the West that have no idea what they're doing on foreign policy, and they're just, it's literally insanity, as Albert Einstein famously said, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. We've had the same foreign policy with both Democrats and Republicans since about Lyndon B. Johnson after Kennedy, which is interventionism, stay in, keep fighting, send more, retaliation, interventionism. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Over and over again, we see that it does not work, and we get blowback, and we get we install these puppet regimes, and what we claim to be fighting for never ends up working. In Iraq, Bush claimed, oh, we're going to go in there, it's going to be quick, we're going to be great as liberators, and we're going to install democracy. This was in 2003. And it's 2016, and there is not democracy in Iraq. They may have a, they may have, what's his name? What the hell is his name? I don't remember his name right now. The Shia president over there. But the people are not happy. And forget democracy. People are dying in mass because of ISIS, which is this monster group that our foreign policy created. So it's what we claim to be doing does not work. It's insanity. The same foreign policy over and over and over again for over 60 years now is not working. Interventionism is not working. We need non-interventionism, and that's the only way we're going to fix this mess in the Middle East. So back to the original question. So is Israel and America behind everything? It's not. We can't just point fingers at two countries, but Israel and America have a large part in fueling the instability in the region because of these wars. America funds these wars, like Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya. Libya was a big problem because that if it wasn't for the war in Libya, the intervention to take out Gaddafi, we would not have ISIS in Libya. So it's very simple. We armed Al-Qaeda. We armed radical Islamists in Libya in order to overthrow Gaddafi. So we trust these. We have a bad guy. So we arm other bad guys to topple that bad guy so the other bad guys can take over. It's pure insanity. So it's a fact. After we after Gaddafi was killed, the flag of Al-Qaeda was flown over the Libyan capital. And those were our men. That's who we armed. The head of that fighting force, I don't remember the exact name, of the Libyan fighting force that we armed, us and NATO, went on to become one of the, actually the chief leader of ISIS in Libya. You can fact check me on that, 100%. I know that for a fact. So we have blowback. All we see is constant blowback, and that's why the Middle East is such is chaos, because we have a problem with fundamentalist Islam there. It's an ideological war. We can't beat ideas. It's impossible. You're just fueling the ideas by continuing this perpetual warfare. And then we have foreign policy makers in America and in the West that have no idea what they're doing. And they're often driven by, you know, the military-industrial complex, and their advisors are in the revolving door between big defense and the government, and it's just this big, it's a mess. It is a complete mess. And with Israel, Israel's a problem too. With Palestine, we're going to get to that in a second. So I don't want to go too long with this, so I kind of covered my opinions in the Middle East. So we'll jump into Israel-Palestine. And once again, it's very Dave Rubin-esque. My friends on the left will not agree with me 100% here. I'm down with the revolution. I am with the occupation. Fuck the occupation. I am with the resistance in Palestine, okay? I'm with the people slinging rocks, trying to break free of this oppression that they've been forced to live under, a state that's been taking its land for over 60 years now, 70 years since the 1947 mandate. And the problem lies within, I cannot support Hamas. I ideologically, philosophically, I cannot bring myself to that level to support Hamas, because Hamas, although they may not believe the same things as ISIS because it's a different sect of Islam, they have the same core belief of the Quran as the word, the perfect word of the creator of the universe. And they actually believe that they're justified in doing these things and killing people and whatnot. And it's not just me saying that. If you actually go on their, I don't know if it's their website. I don't know if Hamas has a fucking website that they type up over there in Palestine. But it's online. It's their, like, charter. It's where they state their beliefs. And it's basically like our Constitution, where you can see what the United States is supposed to stand for. And if you read it, it's all, Allah, the greatest, we will honor thee, and we will retribution and jihad. And it's Islamist fantasy. And I cannot intellectually agree with Hamas. I'm down with the people, the resistance of the people, but it shouldn't have a religious undertone where this is about God and Islam and we have to kill the infidel, and I can't support Hamas. But Israel, I equally despise Israel and Hamas, because Israel is committing war crimes. Israel is occupying their land. In 1947, even if you don't believe that Israel is bad, if you talk to the most right-wing, pro-Israel, Israel has a right to defend itself person, they have to agree with the fact that since 1947, when the UN set the mandate, Israel has expanded the territory and Palestine has been perpetually shrunk. So Israel has taken over. The amount of land that they've assumed is just ridiculous. The most pro-Israel person has to agree with that. It's fact. It's not opinion. And then you have the fact that Netanyahu and the Likud party is far right and fringe, and their policies are disastrous. And Israel receives it's not corporate welfare because they're not a corporation, but Israel is is on American welfare. So basically, we have this rogue state that is committing genocide of Palestinians and war crimes, and they're accumulating territory like crazy. And then over here in the United States, where we claim to be so morally superior, we give them, I forget the exact fact, but it's in the millions. We give them over $1 million a day in military aid. Over $1 million a day to the IDF that is out there executing Palestinians and waging war, Operation Protective Edge 2 summers ago that killed hundreds and hundreds of women and children. It's just sickening. Foreign aid to these countries needs to stop. So that's my perspective on Israel-Palestine. We can get much more in depth with that. I want to get done with this before an hour hits because I know nobody's going to listen to this fully. I'm rambling and this is fun. Okay, so let's go to God and religion. Okay, I don't remember the exact question I got. Let me run to that real quick. Running out of time. Do you believe in God? Okay, this could take me a long time to answer. Basically, I was a very holy, religious little Catholic school boy up until about 2 years ago, and I was brought up Catholic, and my entire family's Catholic, and I still go to a Catholic school, as does my friend Justin, who runs the account with me, and that was my life. I was extremely religious, went to church every Sunday, believed in all this stuff, until I gradually became exposed to other ways of thinking. So, no, I don't believe in the God of the Bible. I don't believe in the God of the Quran. I don't believe in the God of the Talmud. I don't believe in, you know, any of the mythological gods of, you know, Yahweh or Allah, or because we don't have any. All my beliefs are rooted in fact. I am the Doubting Thomas of the Bible. I need fact. If you can prove to me that Yahweh's up there, then I'll believe in him. It's that simple. We can get into a much nuanced argument on atheism where, you know, Sam Harris makes a great point of, you know, we claim that this is a moral and loving God, but in that he's all-knowing. So if he's all-knowing, he purposely orchestrated the situation of putting people in India. He created the Himalayas. He created, you know, I don't know why I said the Himalayas. India, mountains, that's what I thought of immediately. And these people are mostly Hindu. And it is believed, it is taught by the Christian, you know, the magisterium, that if you're not Christian, you're told to do good acts and what you can do, but you're not going to heaven. Whether you go to hell or whatever, most likely going to go to hell. So this all-loving God, why would he purposely orchestrate the creation of these different religions and then allow them to suffer eternally in hell? If he loves them so much, why wouldn't he just say, no, you gotta worship me? And that's another thing. Why does this God need constant worship? If he's such an all-loving being, and shouldn't he not have to have you compliment him? I can get very nuanced with the atheist versus religion conversation, but I hate the word atheist because it has a very bad, people associated with other things, like, he doesn't believe in anything philosophical or morale, anything to do with morality or spirituality, and that's not true. Sometimes you'll find that the most spiritual people are atheist, like a Sam Harris, I'm not comparing myself to Sam Harris, but I tend to be very spiritual. I care a lot about philosophical issues. I think a lot about these things and the world around us and love and those kind of ideas and meditation and peace, and that's all we strive for. So I don't like calling myself an atheist, but I'm a non-theist, I guess you could say, and agnostic at best, because I don't know if there's a God. I'm not going to say that there's like flat out and there's no God, there's no creator, because how am I supposed to know? I have no proof, just as much as the theist has no proof that there is a God sitting up there that created the world in 7 days. So that's my stand on, I'm going to do a whole video on religion one day where I just talk about things with Justin. Let's jump real quick to taxation. Somebody asked a question on taxation. Okay, so basically, if you would have spoke to me a year ago, I would have told you that I was a fucking anarchist. I've shifted many times on the political spectrum. I started off as a kid, I really didn't care about politics. I was definitely right, though, because I was religious Christian, brought up with a Republican family. My dad is a hardcore Republican. My grandpa's Republican. Everybody's Republican, basically. Except my mom's registered Democrat. I try to tell her about the issues. She listens to me. But I grew up in a conservative household, not a conservative state. You know, New York's a blue state, but the majority of the people that I'm affiliated with, like family-wise, are conservative. I've never really met, except a few, you know, like liberal-leaning people. So If you would have asked me about taxes years ago, I would have just told you, yeah, you gotta pay taxes. It's the state, they want your taxes. Okay, boom. A year ago, I entered into those, 2 years ago, I entered into those fringe right ideas. You know, I told you I was with Jones. I was never really at the level of, like, the fringe right with Jones, but that's who I was listening to at the time because I thought that was the only alternative option to media. And I would have told you that, you know, taxation is theft and it's the government stealing your money and whatnot. But, and then as I started to listen to more, you know, intellectual people, like Chomsky influenced me the most on this, in my opinion. The whole concept of having a democratically elected republic is that your elected representatives are representing you, and therefore your tax dollars are going to good causes. So the reason that people have opposition to taxes, including myself, well, one is who the fuck wants to pay money to Washington and take it out of your paycheck? Two, if the people, which is not everybody, because not everybody cares about politics, which is a problem, we need to get that changed. The people who do care, if their policies and what they want to see from their elected representatives is not happening, then why the hell would they want to pay taxes? Why would they want to funnel the money to these people and they're not carrying out what they want? So the reason we have a lot of opposition to taxes is because we have a failing system. If we could fix the system and actually have representatives that carry out what we want and have a non-interventionist foreign policy and don't engage in these trade deals and they rain down on Wall Street and they actually listen to what the people, the majority of the United States, which is shifting left, wants, then we'd have no problem paying taxes because we'd be giving it to a friendly government that will be carrying out what we want. But the problem is we have a hostile government that's not listening to us. So who the fuck wants to pay taxes? So what it boils down to is we need to fix the system. And then taxes, there could be a different way of collecting them instead of coming out of your paycheck. Maybe we could set something aside. I don't know. That could all be down the road. But everybody loves Social Security. Everybody loves Medicare, all those socialist policies that came about from FDR. But nobody wants to have taxpayer money go to welfare for people that actually need it. But the problem is we have a very ill-informed public and we have a system that is failing where the elected representatives do not carry out what we want. So who wants to pay taxes? If the government actually carried out what we wanted, we should have no problem paying taxes because it's our government. Government by the people, for the people, and of the people. We should be. It's us. We can pay ourselves to carry out the the programs and the policy substance that we want. It's very simple in my opinion, but it's a little nuanced and people may not comprehend that. They may just be like, oh, big bad government, big extreme government, they take my money. And that's what you get from the fringe right and the regressive left, which I hate as much as the fringe right. Okay, and the last question was describe in one word what your goal is basically in life and what you're trying to do with the fucking account and becoming a journalist. In one word, I would just say, one word is hard to do. I'll just shoot words. Peace, progress, progress in civilization. Let's lead a new civilization that uses logic and reason and fact and looks at things from a perspective of common sense, and we're all one, and we need to. That's where I'm from. That's where I am on the spectrum. And I just, the whole goal of me doing this is we need the truth. We need the American people to find out what's really going on, and we just need world peace. And it's the most I can do at this age. It's the most we can do, me and Justin. And basically, we're just having fun with this, and we just want to expand this, and hopefully get into the sphere of, you know, people like as I stated earlier. I love Sam Harris and Chomsky and Glenn Greenwald, Amy Goodman, even Alex Jones, who I shitted on about 40 times in this freaking video, Kyle Kulinski, Cenk Uygur, people like that, the alternative media. That's what we need, more alternative media people. Abby Martin, if you hear this, Abby, I have a huge crush on you. I have a girlfriend, but it's more of a journalistic crush. Smitty, you're gonna have to edit that out. Yeah, fuck it, just edit all this out. Yeah, you're gonna have to merge this. So basically, yeah, that's it. And one word doesn't work for me. But we're about to hit the hour point. If any of you listened to this whole thing, thank you. I doubt you did, but this has been fun. And till next time, peace.